This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. On today's archive program, we feature leaders of some of the great big bands. When Duke Ellington died in 1974, his son Mercer took over the band. Much of Mercer Ellington's life was spent working with the orchestra. As a young man, he was the gopher. In 1950, he played briefly with the orchestra, and in 1964, he rejoined as a trumpeter and road manager. Mercer also wrote several compositions that became part of the orchestra's repertoire, including Blue Surge and Jumpin' Pumpkins. His best-known composition is Things Ain't What They Used to Be. This version was recorded live at the 1959 Newport Jazz Festival with Duke Ellington conducting. It must have been difficult for Mercer Ellington to establish his own musical identity, growing up in the shadow of one of America's greatest composers. When I spoke with Mercer in 1989, I asked if his father's death helped liberate Mercer as a composer.
You would think that it would have, but that's not true, really. I'm under the same restriction as far as competition is concerned. Competition with myself, early Mercer Ellington, and competition, with Duke Ellington, with the same problem he had. The things that he's written are so perennial that all our audiences request many of the tunes from the past, and they have such a great warmth and a great charm that you have to do them. And, you know, can you imagine us doing a concert, say, without playing Satin Doll or Mood Indigo or Sophisticated Ladies?
When your father was alive and you wrote a composition, something like, say, Things Ain't What They Used to Be, would he listen to it and then critique it for you?
No. In fact, it was funny you should pick that particular tune because he called me up. He knew I was out in the street playing around, and he laid for me. He had the clerk in the hotel to give him a ring when I came in, which is about 4:30. And I had been complaining because I wasn't getting the opportunity to write anything and do anything about it. So he waited, and at 4:30 he called me and says, we have a session at 9 o'clock. I want you to do a side for me. I just reached for everything and anything I could find and threw it out there at him. And I've been trying to write like that ever since.
What was his reaction to it when he heard it?
His reaction was always, his compliment was always silence. His negative reaction was a suggestion. Well, you might have done this, or do you think this is possible, or whatever. And much as it was the case with him as an individual, to bring him to a point of decision or to get him to make an absolute statement called for a certain kind of treatment that you had to give him. I'd be in the dither as to how to get from one town to the other, whether to charter the bus, whether we should fly or take the train. If I asked him what should I take, I'd never get an answer. So my way of invoking a decision from him would be, well, Pop, tomorrow we're going to get up at 9 o'clock and take the train out to Philadelphia. And he'd say, well, what's wrong with the airplane? Then I knew we could fly.
You played in the Ellington Band, didn't
yes.
you? How long did you play?
I was with them for 1 year in 1950 and left to form a record company. And then again, I joined them in 1967 to stay.
Did you have to audition to get in?
No. I guess the word is con my way into the orchestra. When I got in there as a trombone player, they were very short of musicians because the business was so good, everybody who was a soloist could have his own band. But later, he needed a road manager. And all his friends had turned him down because they said they wanted to remain his friend. And the last man he could think of was me, so he called me up and said, I want you to be the road manager. I knew what trouble he'd had in trying to find someone. I said, yeah, I'll do it. on the proviso that I play trumpet as I do the road manager. So he put me in as a fifth wheel. Actually, I was a fifth wheel. There were five trumpets there at the time.
And that's how you became the road manager, too.
Right.
You ended up being the manager of a band where you knew all the musicians since your childhood.
And which is the worst handicap you can have.
Yeah, because they probably thought of you as the kid, even though you weren't the kid anymore.
And it wasn't that so much. It was just one of those things. They thought of me as the gopher. That was my first job.
So you'd have to run out and get stuff.
I still have it. I have every job left that I started out with. I still go get the sandwiches. I help with the baggage. I help set up the bandstand. And I have to do the copying and also make arrangements.
Was it understood when your father was getting older that you would take over the band after he died?
Absolutely not. I mean, it never occurred to him. It never occurred to me. Only thing, if it had occurred to me, I would have studied piano much more seriously than I did. But all I cared about was getting into the orchestra. And I knew if I played piano, that wouldn't happen.
Mercer Ellington is my guest, and he's conducted the Duke Ellington Orchestra since Mercer's father's death in 1974. Can you tell us what a rehearsal would be like with Duke Ellington?
Well, first off, the 2 o'clock rehearsal got started around about 3:15, and then the guys would come in. They would put down the music and start playing it, and it would sound like the worst thing in the world by the third playing of it. It took on a sound which was completely different and completely identifiable as something that could only be Duke Ellington. And it depended on what he thought of it and what the purpose of what he was rehearsing was for. Many times, for no reason at all, he would rehearse a tune and spend 5 or 6 hours on just one number. And on another occasion, he would just play the number twice and find that the engineers didn't get it properly if we were in a record date. And then he declared, well, okay, that's enough time on that because now the feeling is gone and the soloist can't come up with the same emotion that he had on the first time of playing it. So he'd abandon it until we got to the next studio and next rehearsal, go over it again, studio, rehearsal, until one day he decided, well, now we got the one that's right. So that a rehearsal with Ellington was never something that was like systematic or that you knew there would be some form of methodology that would be called for.
You are, with the Duke Ellington Orchestra, playing some of Ellington's neglected works, some of the extended works, as well as some of his most popular compositions. When you take out a work that hasn't been played in a long time and you're looking at the score, is it difficult to read? And I ask you that because in a memoir that you wrote about your father, Duke Ellington, you say that he frequently wrote really cryptically because he was afraid that people would steal his composition, which was, I guess, pretty common then, that people would steal other people's ideas. So he'd write it so it couldn't be stolen that easily. Are you stuck with having to decipher that now?
No, not really, because I did so much copying that I recognized his symbols and all the little things he did to disguise the music. For instance, one of them would be to write a part and put the wrong clef sign on it. So if somebody had started naming the notes, they'd have it completely messed up. The other thing was to use, this cryptic titling on numbers so that if you heard a number and you wanted to get it out of the book, like, for instance, you know, he'd make an arrangement that would say a new concept of In My Solitude, you'd never find it. If you wanted to say, he did a tune called Squeeze Me. Well, on one occasion, it would be titled Slew Slew. And then another time, he called it Subtle Slough. So if you looked in the in the music to try to, say, take the parts out and copy them over or get some kind of idea of what was happening, you couldn't recognize the tune by the writing that was on it. Well, because the saxophones had one name on it and the trombones had another, and you could never really piece them together.
So how common was stealing through sheet music?
Well, in the days, I mean, it was very blatant at one point. And even in the old Cotton Club days, the guys from downtown would come in with their pencils in their hands and just blatantly sit there with music and sit in the front row copying down what they heard.
It's amazing. In Music Is My Mistress, your father's collection of memoirs and reminiscences about musicians. He wrote a couple of pages about you, and he started it by saying, "My son, Mercer Ellington, is dedicated to maintaining the luster of his father's image." Did you ever feel that he perhaps took that for granted?
No, but what he's doing, in essence, he was saying something in print that he could never say to me individually. And it was not necessarily meant for the reader as much as it was meant for me, because he had the difficulty of being able to talk intimately to me. I have the same difficulty. And if I had to say to my wife or my children or something else that they did something I liked, I'd find it difficult to make the statement. I think this was his way of expressing approval of what many of the things I had done, or saying thanks for having done it.
Since so many people know you as the son of Duke Ellington, are people surprised when they find out that you're getting older yourself? You were born in 1919. Do you know what I mean? I think in a lot of people's eyes, you're going to be just perpetually very young.
Ellington has caused a tremendous oversight on my age for quite a while. In the old days, he used to say he didn't want anyone to know he had a son with gray hair because it might keep the chicks away. and then he's still at it even as of now, because I told people, and we had quite a do, you know, in celebrating his 90th birthday. And so they all got to where, they, you know, we got around and took care of each other and everything like that. And all of a sudden they said something about, "Well, you shouldn't be tired." I explained to him, I said, "You know, you've all been so busy celebrating Duke Ellington's 90th birthday that you've forgotten that I'm on my 70th. And I'd like to get some sleep for a change."
Mercer Ellington, I thank you so much for talking with us. Thank you very much for joining us on Fresh
Air. It's been very pleasant, Terry.
Mercer Ellington recorded in 1989. He's now preparing to record his father's opera Queenie Pie for Motown Records. This summer, Mercer will lead the Ellington Orchestra at major jazz festivals around the world. This is Fresh Air.